The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams is in the studio. Sandy, I want to ask you, are you comfortable with COVID now? I mean, everybody seems, they seem to think that this is over. There, people are talking like we've gotten past it. You know, that nightmare is over. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think we've been living with COVID for so long that it's become sort of the monster we've gotten more comfortable with. But I think COVID is going to be around. I mean, obviously, everything you read, the scientists are all saying it's going to be a disease we'll deal with. Hopefully, it'll be a disease that'll mutate into something much more mild. I think it looks like no matter which iteration of it, whether it's Omicron or the next mutation of it, that it might be a disease that is, in some respects, fairly catastrophic for some human beings who get it. And so that's going to be maybe a sort of the horror of it, is that it'll be maybe like the flu, and the flu does kill some people as well.
Right.
But maybe this is a disease that's somewhat more troublesome than the flu and will therefore be a problem. I think the main thing that we could be getting past is the notion that everyone will get it at once. And the real problem we've had with our healthcare system is this disease that no one has ever had before. When it comes into a community, everybody gets it within a fairly short time frame, which puts a terrible crush on the hospital. Even if only 1% of the people who get it go to the hospital, 1% of a big number is a big number. And so it could be that at least with the kinds of immunity that we've developed, both immunity based on having the disease as well as vaccinated immunity and a combination of those, that number one, the disease will be more mild in the people who get it, and number two, it might happen that the rate at which people are hospitalized from it because of the rate at which people catch it will be much more manageable, in which case I think we can get back to normal.
So do we take a long, hard look at our health care system now after this, and the fact that we certainly need to encourage more people go in the healthcare system, and maybe the way our system is set up is just not capable of handling that. Is there any way, do we now invest more money in that system, or what do we do?
The problem with the system was the capacity problem, which, because the hospitals were filled up and overflowing, they were operating at beyond the capacity for which they had planned to operate and to which they had staffed themselves to operate. And when that happened all over the country, you had a shortage of healthcare workers because it was short everywhere.
Right.
So there wasn't a capacity of someone to move from here to there to fill a vacancy. And furthermore, we stressed those healthcare workers to the point where some of them just dropped out. They burned out, and so we lost headcount as well. Those things should resolve over time, particularly as compensation, which has been moving upward for the healthcare workers, moves up sufficient to provide the support to them. I mean, one of the problems in our economy is that we always come up with the money to pay for healthcare regardless of its cost. So I'm not too worried about what the end result is going to be for healthcare. I am worried about what the result is going to be for costs and availability. And I do think that COVID clearly pointed out to us that we are not anywhere near universal health care in the United States, and we need to get there. We suspended that rule for COVID and basically dealt with the people who got COVID on a basis that was different from the way we deal with other illnesses. And now we need to just step back and say, you know what, we've got to change the way we operate.
You know, Sandy, over the decades, we've shut down a lot of hospitals. And the bigger, stronger ones are the ones that have survived. I can think of so many smaller hospitals that were around 20, 25, 30 years ago. Do we build more hospitals? I mean, we're not going to overcorrect this thing by...
Well, we could overcorrect. I mean, I don't think there was a shortage particularly of hospitals so much as there was a shortage of manned capacity in hospitals. They could convert to ICUs relatively quickly. I mean, there are hospitals like I think it's called the Summit Aurora Hospital out near Oconomowoc that never filled up I don't know if it filled up during COVID, but I don't know if we had so much a total bed shortage as we had a staffed bed shortage. And building more hospitals, more expensive hospitals, isn't necessarily the way that we're going to solve healthcare. I think the main thing with healthcare is to put money and coverage, insurance coverage, or some kind of either Medicare for All or insurance for all program into place that actually covers everyone, and then also create a process that causes the cost of healthcare to be evaluated by the buyers and some pressure to be put on by the buyers of healthcare.
Do you really think or see a possibility where Medicare for All can be a reality in this nation?
Well, first of all, as we're all getting older, pretty soon there'll be Medicare for a much bigger percentage of people as we all qualify for it by age. Well, I think Medicare has proven to be a very sound form of medical insurance. And as for the cost effectiveness of it, I suspect that an evaluation of that would reveal that it's quite cost effective as compared to independent insurance. So I think Medicare for All does have some potential.
So even though you see Medicare for All has some potential, and yet Medicare cannot regulate the cost of prescription drugs.
Well, that has to be changed. I mean, the pork barrel of K Street that caused Medicare to not be allowed to negotiate prices for prescription drugs is crazy. Because, yeah, you know, when you have a huge buyer like Medicare, furthermore, lots of the rest of the industry has taken the position that, for instance, insurance takes the position that we'll pay for what Medicare pays for. Well, they gave up negotiating prescription drugs, so I guess that means the cost gets paid, passed through to everyone in every financing vehicle that's out there.
You know, the other part of that is these folk who are making these private entities that are making all this money, they're not going to voluntarily give up and give in.
Well, the prescription drug makers. Well, no, they're obviously they financed the lobbying that got that lodged in the legislation in the past, and they'll be there to protect it in the future. But you know, there's every reason why patented drugs are a monopoly, and if we're allow drugs to be patented, we'll be giving them in a monopoly. And there's longstanding 125-year-old policy in the United States to regulate monopolies governmentally for price. So in my view, I don't know why it isn't talked about in Washington, but my view is the exchange for granting patents to drugs is the opportunity for the government to regulate, to fairly regulate to a reasonable return the price of those drugs.
So, Sandy, before we get out of here, I want to go back to Ukraine and Russia, and today is an opportunity, I guess, where, you know, it's just on the beginning, just at the beginning of this. Just for people who may just be joining us, what should people be thinking? What should we be thinking in these early stages of where we are?
Well, I think we should, to the extent people pray, I think they should be praying for nonviolence, trying to stop the actual warfare, but also to stop the fallout that kind of creates the environment for the war. I mean, I think sanctions that affect the people of another country and affect their ability to buy food and to live is not necessarily a humane way to behave from a diplomatic standpoint. And I think we need to pray that we'll get a foreign policy in this country that is wise, is based on facts, based on an understanding of regions, that is based on an empathetic view of what other countries need, want. We have to stop being this kind of bullying elephant that can walk around with our big feet, stepping where we want, stepping on things as we, you know, and telling people what to do. We need to get a wise approach to foreign policy.
Do you think, I mean, you're a globe traveler. Had you not had the opportunities to go to different nations and talk to different people from those nations, I guess many of us in this country don't see that, don't get that opportunity, and fail to understand that they're human beings just like we are, who want the same things we want.
Yeah, I think traveling is vital. I think meeting other, because you know what? This whole notion of American exceptionalism begins to kind of wash away a little bit when you realize how exceptional other people are as well. And how
exceptionalism is not determined by the nation that you come from.
Yeah, it isn't determined by the geographic boundaries within which you live. And you begin to realize that there are all these other vantage points that need to be taken into account.
Sandy, it's always great, man, talking with you, having you on the airways. I'm looking forward to our continued conversations and days and weeks to come. Thank you for always being there when I ask you.
Yeah, well, it's a great opportunity, actually. I really enjoy the process. I like your new digs out here in Waukesha. This is comfortable.
Yeah, can you imagine when it's nice and warm, man, the sun's shining?
Yeah, it'll be beautiful.
Yeah, it'll be beautiful. Okay, Sam, thank you. Thank everybody who made the show go. I'll be back on tomorrow, Friday already. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.